You are listening to Feeding the Mouth That Bites You with Ashley Parrish and Jessica Pfeiffer,
a weekly podcast guide on parenting teens and launching them into the world. As always, we are joined by psychologist and author, Dr. Ken Wilgus.
Hey, everyone, and welcome back. On today's episode, we are doing another Q&A.
So we had a question about a teen who is gaining weight, or we've also had questions about teens who have poor diet or they don't exercise, and parents being concerned because they have family history of medical issues. What do I do? How do I encourage my teen?
That fits in the category of just remembering that even in serious circumstances like physical health, and as you know, with a lot of our teenagers, the diet that's out there and available when we're not around, the lack of activity that's now required in life, and even sedentary things like games and so forth. Obesity is a very big problem. And you couple that then with, but this is a young adult and I need to be impactful, but in a way that still sustains their self-respect. Then it gets down to a couple things. Number one, it's really never a good idea to talk about, if you're going to talk about food and the things you're eating, then I would say for virtually all ages with teenagers, you want to make sure that you cast that in the category of this is advice. Honey, I'm sorry. I know that you don't like me asking this, but I'm worried I worry. And so I saw you yesterday eating this and that and whatever. Do you think I'm way overreacting? That's advice. What is not advice would be, if you eat one more potato chip, you're going to be grounded. Okay, well, that's silly. It doesn't fit in that kind of category. Mostly parents do that middle ground where I'm not telling you it's advice. I'm talking real firm about this, that, you know, you need to get some broccoli. Why do you have to eat this? That's a kind of naggy and is the least effective of any of that communication. Mm-hmm. So all that means is that it's usually a means of really working on cranking up your communication. But at the same time, and parents always talk about this, most parents realize that, yeah, you can set limits like, I'm not going to buy that stuff. I'm buying stuff for our family, and you are welcome to eat. We want you to eat the food that's here. But no, I am not going to buy that junk that you want me to buy. But the hard thing is, yeah, but what if she has or he has his own money? Do I make sure that he doesn't? That's a losing battle. It's just not effective. So it's mostly a matter of communication and realizing also that you're under no obligation to, if you will, provide the food that you know is not good for them.
Mm-hmm. And I think this is where the no lecturing part just comes in, where you don't lecture your kids about their family history and what's going to happen to you. I mean,
yes,
you can mention that. I think they need to know grandma and grandpa both died of heart attacks, and maybe you should know that, you know, but
that's right. Oh, and I should tell you that up until even middle adolescence, it's perfectly reasonable to require that they are involved in a sport or physical activity. Mm-hmm. I don't care what it is. I happen to think you were really good in the tennis program. That's me. But no, and you can quit tennis because you're 14, you're 15, whatever. But you'll have to pick another thing that you do that occupies at least, I don't know, 4-6 hours a week of physical activity, because I'm not allowing you to sit around doing nothing in the house yet. That'll come maybe by your junior, senior year. Everything is not yet, either no or not yet, but you can require that they be involved in something that is physical activity, yeah.
Okay, Dr. Ken, next question. Our teen isn't interested in our youth group, but they're not old enough to drive. Should the whole family look for a new church?
I like that question. It comes up more than you think. Mostly what it comes up is that parents, you know, the parents I work with are they're so passionate, you know, they really want to do well. And so I've known a lot of families that have jumped churches a couple times because my kid didn't like the church. With teenagers, I mean, maybe with children, that's obviously something to keep in mind in how you choose your church. But with teenagers, I would actually caution against overdoing that. It makes church seem like it's mainly about whether it has enough entertainment value for us as a family. Mm-hmm. And you know, I hope we all agree that no, that's not actually what church is about. So in that case, I would at the very most be cautious about tailoring your church choice around your teenager. The other option is that you can allow more flexibility, that you have to go to this service and this one thing that the church does, youth thing or whatever, but you don't have to do the other, you know, something you can try to take it into account that, you know, I'm really sorry you don't like it. And I get that. So because of that, we'll back up on what you have to do. That's fine. And then the other is we've mentioned before is what about your friends? Don't they go to that cool church? Well, as long as you're doing the once a week thing with us, then we're fine with you going with them to the other place. I think that fits more of a teenager kind of thing rather than the good parent that we just want to go to a church that's good for our children. That gets close to kind of worship of children. And we don't do that. Mm-hmm. So ironically, my answer, especially with teenagers, is I would be careful about overdoing the jumping for their sake. It doesn't pay off like you think, that's for sure. And it's also giving them the wrong message.
Right. Well, we discussed it in episode 22 and 23. If our listeners want to go back and listen to those episodes and gain a little bit more wisdom about this area. You know, something that happened to us recently, you know, we're still new to this area and COVID kind of put a slow on things of us finding a church home. Well, we have, and we all went recently. Afterward, I got a text from a mom last Sunday after church saying that her daughter was thrilled that our daughter was in youth group. And so it's just neat that I was able to tell our daughter, our teenage daughter, hey, so-and-so's mom texted me because they were so happy that you were there.
You know, and that fits into that thing we've discussed in several contexts, that it is also good to remind teenagers that your participation in this thing isn't just about what it does for you. Yes. You have an impact on others. I wouldn't over obligate that. It's not like I don't care that you hate the church. You have to be there for your friends. But I think it's an important balancer for sure. And I like that story.
Okay. So another listener sent a message that they are moving and their older teen is angry about the move. Can the older teen stay behind? They'd like to stay behind and finish out their last year of school with friends or with other family members.
Okay. So number one, I would do this little checklist. Number one, have you yourself thought about and have you communicated clearly that we really would not make this move if we really didn't have to? We understand that this is a huge burden for you, and that's been part of our decision-making in this choice, but we still kind of need to make this move. Make sure they know that you're not doing this carelessly or without concern for them. Then number two, I would say in virtually all cases, you might consider it in their senior year. It's hard for me to imagine doing it, allowing a teenager to stay in a place more than an entire year, because it's a big step. But number three, then, yeah, I have had circumstances where the move during my kid's senior year, we knew it was hard. Where we were going, there wasn't a lot of option. This is a good kid, young adult, remember the young adult, and this family or friend has genuinely offered. And we, if that's what he or she really wants to do, then we have said that, yeah, the balance of the negative side effect of moving versus the positive of at least being able to stay set where you are has added up to, in some cases, yeah, you can do that. I can't imagine more than last year or last semester of their high school. And there's circumstances even with a senior that just aren't good, but with individual examples or exceptions in that, it's not out of the question. In some cases, I've had parents do that and do it successfully.
Mm-hmm. Okay, Dr. Ken, next question. My teen wants to join the military, but I'm opposed to it.
Yeah. Okay. Number one, if you're talking about a teenager that is not anywhere close to 18, then that's a communication thing. And you do not want to have anything that sounds like a control battle. Well, no daughter of mine is going to join the Army. You're going to end up in a weird control battle about it. So you really want to do that in complete communication, which would be, well, you know how that strikes me. I'm your mom. Scares me to death. Why? What's the advantage to you? That's an effective way of talking about it. But then number two, if this teenager is anywhere near 18 or has reached 18, that's not a kid that wants to join the military. That's a young adult that could absolutely, and I don't know if you know this, but boy, you go to a certain recruiting offices and just nod and wink, and maybe they will make sure it happens. If you qualify, they will make sure it happens, and they will make sure it happens before the end of the month, because there are bonuses to be had for signing people up. So be aware that, you know, by 18, it isn't your choice. And they have that power. So in that case, then you definitely want to be able to be communicating about it, about what your reasons are. Basically, what I'm saying is that it is rarely, I can't think of anything effective to hang some sort of consequence on the military. It's something to really communicate about what your concerns and your fears are. And then the last thing I'd say is I would examine your concerns and fears, because, you know, the desire for the military, you know, in some cases it's a kind of a default. I can't get anything going, so I'm just going to do that. But in many cases, it's an honorable choice. It is service to the country. We're just all against that because you're my baby. I don't think that's very respectful, not only of your young adult child, but of our country.
Mm-hmm. Right.
I was going to say that too. As hard as it is to be a parent and watch your kid make a choice that could be risky, you don't want to parent out of fear, and you don't want to keep them from their full potential because of your irrational fears.
Yes. And maybe it's a difficulty. Yeah. I sat at a college graduation many years ago that had some graduates that were entering, you know, they had finished officer training at this college and were heading into the military. And I remember thinking they were just beautiful young people, these young men and women. And I happened to, at that time, have grave doubts about the commander in chief that was in charge of this country. And I just felt real mixed and sort of sick about it. And I was comforted by reminding that how I see this is it's not really up to me. It's not my business. This is their calling. And this is what they are really pretty committed to doing. And who am I to insert my little uncertain opinions about it? That is their life.
Okay, Dr. Kim, this is the last question for today. A listener wrote in and said that they're tempted to share photos of their kids' bedrooms on social media in a way to shame them into cleaning their room. It's an anonymous listener.
Yeah.
Okay, Ashley.
Just tell the truth.
Ashley, I got a few texts from you of your sister, your daughter's room, just comparing notes between our two girls. And who wins? Who wins at the worst room contest?
Public shaming. Does it work, Dr. Kim? This listener wants to know.
Yeah, tell your friend. Yeah, I get that a lot. You know, it's funny how often that comes up. I watch it. There was a YouTube video years ago of a dad who was making a video to his teenage daughter about her use of computer and how she loves this computer. It was a laptop. He's sitting outside, and basically he ends the video with firing his 9mm pistol into that computer. It was just a public, you know, it made big, not a lot of views. People love that kind of stuff. There was the mother that made her teenage daughter. Now you look into the camera, you tell them I'm 13. I'm not even old enough to wipe myself good, because she had been flirting with a guy online. There's just tons of that where you're tempted to just, this is once and for all. I think the most recent, did you see that dad who wore short shorts to make a point to his daughters about how they look. Here's the bottom line, because I follow up on those stories. I actually, that dad that shot her daughter's computer, I also happen to know that weeks later, he apologized to her for that. He didn't realize how much YouTube is actually looked at, and it was a mistake. Mm-hmm. So the summary is, it is virtually always a mistake. No, it is always a mistake to use shaming as a way of really kind of impacting a young adult, because it doesn't work. None of these teenagers came away thinking, man, I have learned my lesson, because they are the incredible lack of respect overshadows whatever message you're trying to say. And number two, I think we should be honest. In a lot of these cases, you're making this about you. You want publicly doing stuff is to show just what a good parent I am. You know, there was a mom who actually went to a college and sat with her athlete son on classes. And it was kind of celebrated as, well, good for you. I have concerns about it because it has a bad habit of making it about you. So it's tempting. I'm sure your friend is tempted. But it isn't effective. And that's the main thing. It's not even about, is it mean? Is it, if it really were effective, I would have a different opinion about it. And then just in case someone's thinking about it, or thinking, I know there are some judges in courts that actually use creative shaming. Like you have to stand in front of the store that you stole from, and with a sign. I am not commenting on how the, our community or state or city chooses to act out punishment. That's a whole different entity. I'm talking about the effectiveness of a parent doing it. And it's just the humiliation completely overshadows whatever message you're trying to say. And right. it just doesn't work.
And we're just poking fun at this, but to also highlight the importance of the teenager parent relationship, and that it is something sacred, and that needs to be, something where there's privacy. And with our day and age of social media, parents of teenagers really need to be careful and guard that for them.
That's a good point.
Because then you keep that relationship open. And when your teenager makes mistakes, because they will, we make mistakes as adults, that they feel comfortable coming to us and sharing their mistakes so that then we can have open communication with one another. But if you're shaming your teenager, they're not going to think that you're a safe place.
Well, and you're right. I mean, it'll completely interfere with whatever communication you've established. You could destroy it in one little video. And I mean, it'd be good for you to I look at this stuff and I'm kind of weird about it, but there's YouTubes of parents destroying their kids' Xbox and video game console. That's a parent that didn't do the hard work of setting the limits day in and day out in a way that makes misuse of this video game system your teenager's problem, not yours. This parent was lazy and let it build up and build up, and they're just out of control, angry, and it makes a spectacle of all things social media that is just makes every, it's a lose-lose for everybody.
It's true. I agree with that. Well, thank you so much, you guys. These question and answer conversations are fun, kind of bounce around a little bit. We hear a little bit of everything. And to our listeners, we love hearing from you. We love hearing from you on social media. We love getting emails from you. It makes our day to have conversations with people who are trying to do the best by their kids and working hard at this parenting gig. So it's a lot of fun, and it's a good sense of community. We're not alone doing this. We're all in this as parents. So thank you for your time today, you guys. I appreciate you, Ashley and Dr. Ken.
Thanks for joining us today. Hit the subscribe button so you won't miss an episode. Also, leave us a review. This is how other listeners find our podcast. Follow us on Instagram at Feeding the Mouth.
We appreciate you and would love to hear from you. If you have any questions, thoughts, or ideas about what we've discussed today, please email us at podcast@feedingthemouth.com.
This episode sponsored by We Feed Raw. Have you ever actually looked at the label on your dog's food? Most dog food labels are a long list of things that don't look like food. Powders, starches, additives used to hold ultra-processed kibble together. At We Feed Raw, the label looks very different. High-quality meat, nutrient-rich organs, complete and balanced nutrition formulated by PhD nutrition experts. No fillers, no artificial preservatives, just real ingredients that support your dog's whole body health. That's why many pet parents see real changes after switching to WeFeed Raw's fresh meals. If you want to feed your dog one of the healthiest diets possible, WeFeed Raw makes it simple. Right now, new customers can get 40% off their starter box plus free shipping. Visit WeFeedRaw at WeFeedRaw.com to get started today.